Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. I have a very exciting guest. I would consider a master of transformation. We have Kelton Effects with us today. Kelton is a visual effects makeup artist, a fine artist, a cosplayer, a doll maker, everything in between. I'm super excited to get to talk to you. I know that we've passed each other a lot at like shoots and stuff, but I think this is our first time getting to like have a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah, I feel like every time I see you at shoots, it's like, oh, hi, but then you're busy like running off trying to get your photos done. So,
Yeah, it's always like hi bye, hi bye. Yeah.
yeah.
Except I remember my I have this very distinct memory of you going, "Would you like some alcohol spray?" And I'm like,
Setting spray.
"Yes, please."
I'll help in any way I can.
Spritz me. Yes. Well, welcome. I'm so excited to talk to you about everything, mostly makeup because I have some exciting little facts I wanted you to play factor cap with like makeup tricks and stuff later on.
Okay, that sounds fun.
But I know you started as a fine artist, but
Yes.
you were making cosplays since you were 14 years old, right?
Yes. I mean, I guess I technically started making costumes when I was 16, but 14 was kind of where I got into like Japanese visual kei bands, like Japanese like rock bands, and that's kind of where I started doing research, and then I found that people dress up like their favorite rock band members, and then later I found out that people cosplay as video game characters. I was like, oh, this is a thing. So I was like, okay, cool. That's kind of how I got into it. Yeah.
Sparked your interest, and then you started crafting at
Yeah.
like a
Because
couple years later.
it started off, I was making fashion for myself. Like, I was always alternative. So I was making like goth clothes for myself because I didn't have a Hot Topic. I grew up in Singapore. So, didn't have access to any of those clothes. So I was making everything myself, going to the stores and buying my own fabric. And then, so I was dressing up as my favorite band members first. And later, I started making video game cosplays.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the first cosplay was that you ever made yourself?
Not counting my Japanese rock band stuff, I think my first proper cosplay was actually Pyramid Head from Silent Hill 2.
No way! You
Yeah.
went big
It's
immediately!
like
That's
body paint, hot
crazy!
glue, and cardboard. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
Yeah.
When you were doing more fine art, can you, for anyone who doesn't really know that world, myself included, what would a career as like a fine artist be?
I guess there's many different types of fine art. And most contemporary art is a lot of sculpture and painting. I mean, now I think people associate a lot like Jackson Pollock or like Andy Warhol, like pop art. That's a lot of the contemporary stuff. I wasn't personally into that. A lot of my influences are more surreal horror artists. So I love like Hans Bellmer, who's a doll sculptor. I love like H.R. Giger, so like biomech surreal type stuff. So my work leans to more figurative and the macabre. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. And you have some on display
Yes, I
for us
brought
right
some
now. We have
stuff for
some
show and
guests.
tell.
And I'm
Yeah.
super excited to talk about them all. What made you decide to switch from fine art to do more cosplay, more visual effects?
I think I always loved cosplay and making costumes and creating like my own characters. When I was in fine art, I realized that I didn't really enjoy how superficial the scene was. It was very much like it wasn't so much about the technical skill of the artist anymore. It's more about the idea. So the idea outweighs the actual skill of the artist. And people now, for contemporary art, they just hire a whole team to make stuff for them and slap their name on it. And so that's kind of why I wanted to like take a step back. And then decided, you know, since I like making characters and monsters, I was like, I'm gonna move to LA, go to makeup school, and work in film. Yeah.
And so you work on a ton of different sets right now,
Yes.
right? You
Yeah.
said you do commercial, you do cosplay, you do all kinds of things.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff with video game companies, activations and event work. I work in film and music videos and that kind of thing. Yeah.
It's so cool. I'm so excited to talk about all of your different projects. I know you worked with Rolyat
Yeah.
on her Bride of Frankenstein for
Yes.
Halloween, and you did a lot of stuff with Baby No Money and a lot of really cool original characters as
Yeah.
well. Do you have a like standout moment that you can think of?
I guess every time people ask regarding like commercial work, I think getting to work with Alicia Marie with Megan Thee Stallion on a Mortal Kombat commercial, we got to turn her into one of my favorite Mortal Kombat characters, which is Melina. She has like the teeth. And I've done like 5 different versions of Melina now, like including my own cosplay. So getting to like take that into like a job I'm getting paid to do was like really cool.
Yeah, Melina's my favorite character as
well. She's a badass.
How was working with Megan Thee Stallion? That's so awesome.
Intimidating. I didn't have as much time as I would have liked to get it done because, you know, like commercial shoots are always so crazy and they're all like, you know, go. Mm-hmm. But I think it turned out really cool in the end. That was a really fun project, and I'm glad I got to work with a good friend of mine, Alicia Marie, who made her entire costume. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like I was there alone, which is, I think, very nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it helps when you have friends with you for sure.
It's like emotional support.
I know, I would be quaking if I was working with Megan Thee Stallion or somebody that I have like only seen online, you know. There's a certain element of I've never seen you in real life, and my brain is having trouble like putting you as a person in front of me when I've only seen you on a screen. On top of, you know, the starstruck, oh my God.
I think after you've worked in the industry for a while, you kind of have to separate the feelings that you have from being starstruck and just be like, okay, we're on the same level, you know, we're coworkers right now, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you grew up in Singapore.
Yeah.
How did that influence all of the art that you do today?
I think I was very inspired by all the different cultures I have because Singapore is such a melting pot of different cultures. And being in an international school there, they would always take us to like different temples. So we like learn about the history of different religions and cultures. And I think that influenced a lot of my work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched your entire breakdown of your Symmetra costume that you did for BlizzCon.
Yeah.
And there was so many, you like got the fabric in Singapore, right?
Yeah. Actually, I went to Singapore and Thailand to kind of source fabrics, but I ended up finding a lot more Indian fabrics in Singapore. So it was just like the Southeast Asian part. I mean, I wish I could have flown to India, but I don't have family there, so it would have been hard. Singapore is the closest I could, but thankfully there was a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, and it was beautiful.
Thank you
so
much.
It was such a crazy, you had moving pieces, and do you sometimes, when you're making these like huge cosplays or really huge builds, you don't just work on like the visual effects, right? You do the cosplay, the sewing and everything, right?
Yeah. So even though I am a makeup artist, when I do cosplay, it's I view it as like a whole character. So for that particular costume, the Symmetra costume, I had my friend Frank, who is a brilliant animatronic specialist, and he does programming and stuff. So he actually came in and helped fix most of the lights and the moving parts on that, because I don't know how to do any of the programming. Like, that stuff is out of my element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can only do so much. You're already doing so much of it.
Yeah.
I get it. But it was such a cool costume.
Thank you.
The moving parts aside, like the construction was amazing. Like, you casted your own face.
I actually brought the face with me.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
please show it off.
You can touch it.
Can I?
Yeah.
You highlighted the cheeks and everything.
Yeah, I had
oh
to make
God.
It a little more like magical, ethereal, like punch some eyebrows and eyelashes.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's so crazy to see in real life.
Yeah. This is like a small piece that went on the back of the costume. There's like a giant wheel. So there's like this contraption we built. So when the wheel would rotate clockwise, this would go anti-clockwise, so it would stay like stable, basically.
So cool.
So
and you won, right?
Yes, I won the overall champion, which was crazy. So that was just really funny too, because like right after we won, I was like, yay, it's done. We went backstage and took a photo with the judges, and then the wheel fell off. I was like, it's done.
I already got my prize.
I know. I was like, it could have happened on stage, but it happened backstage. So I was like, thank God.
Yeah, just holding on for dear life. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so cool. I loved seeing your process. Is there anything that you would say goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't realize when it comes to building something so intricate?
Yeah, I think too.
It's like all of it.
All of it, yeah. I mean, the research alone, I think, was at least like a month or 2 months of research. The whole thing was like 13 months of work. So I think when people just see the finished product, they're like, okay, cool. But then they don't see all the little intricate details that go into actually making it, you know, mm-hmm. like all the troubleshooting and the crying and like getting things to work. And you're like, oh, why is it not working? Like, we had a eyeball on the gun that like moves and like looks around kind of like in the game. We wanted to, on her dragon skin, there was an eyeball that looks around. So we wanted to kind of emulate that. And then just trying to figure out the programming on the servos was difficult. And then sometimes, you know, with animatronics, they're unpredictable, just like with any sort of tech. So sometimes it doesn't work and you're like, oh, so I was so worried the whole time, worrying that something wouldn't end up working while I was on stage or whatever. So mm-hmm. that was nerve-wracking for sure.
But it held it together.
Yes.
We held it together. It's very impressive. That costume was crazy. You grew up in Singapore. I deviated from what I was talking about before a little bit, but I'm bringing it back. Your grandma and your mom are both big supporters of yours. How did they help you with like the journey that you were on, like the visual effects and art in general? And when did you realize that this was going to be your career path?
I think my parents are always like worried about me at first because they're like, how do you make a living as an artist? Mm-hmm. You know, and they weren't very sure. But I think I always knew what I wanted to do. So I never really deviated from that path that I had in mind. And then when I started getting noticed for like my costume work when I was a kid, or getting like featured in newspaper articles, they're like, oh, okay, I guess it's going somewhere. So then when I moved to LA, they're like, oh, so you can get paid like a decent rate to do your work. Like mm-hmm. back in Asia, I think doing the stuff that I do now for film would be a lot harder because there isn't as big of a film industry there. Mm. They do, like in Singapore, there is a film industry, but it's not special effects. There's not a lot of special effects. A lot of it's very like regular makeup. And I tend to do a lot more prosthetics and creature effects and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Is that mainly what you do?
Yes. Yeah, so I do a combination of both. So I get a lot of models that want to do both beauty and special effects. So like, for example, you brought up Roliette doing her Frankenstein makeup. I've mm-hmm. done a couple projects with her now, but I get a lot of clients who like to do like pretty monsters, you know, so mm-hmm. that's fun because I love beauty makeup as well. So it's like a nice mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What got you interested in horror when you were growing up? You mentioned you were always alternative.
Yeah.
What was like the door that opened for you? Or do you remember watching something when you were younger that you might have watched too early or anything?
Yes. I mean, I loved the Disney films growing up, and I always loved like the villains, like Hades, Maleficent, Ursula. And then when I was 10 years old, I watched Hellraiser and I was like, that's my aesthetic.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I've always been into horror, and then I got into like Resident Evil, Silent Hill games, and that's kind of where my love just like, you know, for horror just, I was really into slasher films, and that's like, I love, for me, I guess people who are squeamish are like, oh my God, why do you like watching that stuff? But for me, I was on like bestscore.com when I was a kid, you know, in the 2000s, we're looking at that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was very fascinated by how they would achieve those effects in film. So I wanted mm-hmm. to do that myself too. And I think that's kind of where I got into that industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was your first like visual effects makeup look that you did?
I guess really shitty body paint when I was doing like Silent Hill cosplays when I was like 16. But mm-hmm. I think, I don't know, that's tough. After makeup school, I got really lucky. I got on a short film pretty fresh out of school called The Cleaning Lady. Mm-hmm. It was like a short proof of concept. And then I went on and got attached to the feature film that was made in 2018. So there's this character that has the lead character, Shelley, who's like a cleaning lady. She has like a burnt face. And so basically I had to come up with a character that was scarred, but she can't be Freddy Krueger looking. So we found like a nice medium of her still looking more human since she was on screen so much, but she does have like a burnt face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was your first big job, would you say?
I would say that's my first big credit that I got. So like getting to be in a feature, I think 3 years after I graduated from makeup school was probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, congratulations.
Thank
You're
you.
So good. You sent a bunch of photos beforehand,
yes.
And I was looking through them all like, this is so crazy. do you have a favorite horror film?
Oh, that's hard.
Or a top three, if that's too hard.
I always like name like top five or top three. But I would say The Thing by John Carpenter. It's one of my favorites because, you know, the creature effects in there are timeless. I love Ginger Snaps, which is a great like female-centered horror about werewolves. And let me think. Fuck, I can't. Oh, I'm sorry.
Swear. You can curse on
here. I can curse? Okay.
Yeah. You're free. Trust me, I wouldn't be able to make it.
Oh my God, yeah. It's so hard to not curse because I have a potty mouth, but.
Yeah, so do I. I do too.
oh my gosh, I can't. I would say, okay, The Thing and Ginger Snaps are my top two. I'm blanking on a third right now, but I really like Hereditary. Ari Aster is Hereditary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really like the horror aesthetic and I like the idea of it. Like I love going to Halloween Horror Nights and seeing all of the cool sets. I like sets and like props and stuff.
Yeah.
I think the makeup is so cool, but I almost looked at it when I was younger and was like, I'll never figure that out.
Yeah.
So I just like skipped right over it. So I feel like I appreciate it a lot because mm-hmm. it seems so difficult for me. Because what has always clicked with me is more like prop making and stuff like that. But my favorite horror franchises are all probably video game centered because I'm much more of a gamer than I am a movie watcher.
Okay.
But Resident Evil is one of my favorite franchises of all time. I love the Resident Evil franchise.
Did you like the remakes?
Yes, I did. I loved them.
Which is your favorite of the recent remakes?
Four? Yeah.
I love two.
I love two, really two. It's hard to choose.
Three was disappointing. I'm sorry. I love the original three and then three remake was just not good.
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely the weakest
yeah.
that I've played for sure. But I loved, so I actually didn't play them all until 7.
Oh, wow.
Because I tried to play Resident Evil, the first one, super young, way too young.
It's very hard game.
Yeah, the camera angles were crazy. And there was this moment in the original where I was walking through that really well-lit hallway and all of the dogs jumped through the windows and I threw the controller and I stopped playing and I never played it again. And then I had when the remaster
the
came
remake
out,
one. Oh, mm-hmm. I love that one. That one's so good.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I kind of had this moment on my Twitch stream where I was like, what if we full circle moment this, bring it back and I actually play through it and then...
Didn't they trick you though? Because I think the dogs don't jump through the window in the remake, right?
They don't.
Yeah.
No, they don't. I was like waiting for it and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I loved 7 so much that I went back and I played all of them.
Yeah.
And then I played the remakes and I love them all. Except for... I never played 5 and 6.
I never played 5. 6 is a mess, but I played it because Leon and Ada are in it, so they're my favorite ship. Leon
Same.
And Ada.
Same. Oh my God, I love them so much.
Yeah.
Same. Ada, every time I'm playing Resident Evil and Ada's in it and she does something, she steals something from me, I'm like, take it, queen. Take it. You can have it.
I love that Leon's so pussy whipped. That's cute.
I know. It is, isn't it? It's really charming. And his little one-liners. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. I also love Dead Space. Mm-hmm. Did you play Dead Space?
I played the original 2. Yeah. I didn't play 3. I played some of the remake, but I haven't finished it yet. But I love that it's like very much almost shot for shot the original.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I did the same. I loved the original and then I went to play the remake and I never finished it because it's so similar. But I love that. My favorite horror games to play are ones where you can fight back.
Yeah.
With multitudes of weapons. I think if you have to hide.
Oh, you don't like those?
I can't do it. I get so scared.
But isn't that like, okay, wait. I guess in 7 you can fight back, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in 8, didn't you have to hide for a lot of it too? I don't remember.
Yeah. But it's, I would say the genre of like no weapon, you have to like find a light.
That's a lot of the indie games now.
Mm-hmm, In the dark. I'm just so scared of the dark. I'm a little baby. There could be people out there. I don't know. Do you think that if people saw the behind the scenes of making all of these like horror genre of movies and like the makeup processes of all of it, do you think that people would be less scared of the genre?
I think so. I think if people had a more behind the scenes look at how these effects are made, then you kind of separate that reality from it, you know, and, mm-hmm. and there's a certain level of distance between yourself and the material that you're consuming. Mm-hmm. So I think to anyone that works in film, they say it's very hard. Like for example, like for me, I'm always like analyzing makeup and effects when I watch a film. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone who's like a DP, they're looking at like the shots, or someone does lighting, they're like looking at the lighting in the scene. So it's hard to just watch the film for what it is when you work in the industry.
Mm-hmm. But, totally. Yeah. I catch myself looking at wigs and stuff all the time as a cosplayer. can you still enjoy the media though as you're watching it?
Yeah, I think so. It's you can still enjoy it, but I think too sometimes you're like, oh, they use that take, really? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have you ever seen like somebody's eyelash misplaced or something, or something that like wrong with the makeup, like not blended or something like that, and have been like, ah?
So the thing about film that I really love is that a lot of the times they're, the makeup serves a character. So for example, if it's just an everyday housewife, she doesn't have to have perfect makeup because mm-hmm. she's doing it herself. So it becomes part of the character. Mm-hmm. So I think that to me is really interesting versus when you compare that to like a fashion shoot, then mm-hmm. everything has to be like pristine. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's nice. It becomes an element that tells part of the story, just like the set design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like character building.
Yeah.
I ask because I saw a really bad wig in a movie one time, and it's all I could see the entire time. I was just hyper fixated. It was the Black Widow wig. Have you seen
the Black Widow movie? I did see that Fantastic Four movie, not the new one, but like the one before with Kate Mara as Sue Storm, mm-hmm. and then they had to do reshoots and her wig's like a completely different color, different hairline.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Oh yeah, my God.
If you look it up, you'll see there's like very obvious reshoot scenes.
That's crazy for Marvel. That's crazy for a superhero movie. How has being involved in the process of the behind the scenes affected your outlook on horror entertainment?
Oh, that's tough. Let me see.
Do you feel like you still enjoy it like you used to, or is working in it sort of ruining the hobby for you?
No, I mean, obviously, I think the hardest thing would be the long hours on set, because you're looking at anywhere from like 12 to 15 hour days. Mm-hmm. And I think the longest day I had on set one time was a 17 hour day. Mm-hmm. And all of us were just like dead by the end of it. You know, my actress like ripped off her prosthetics. I was like, please don't. But she was like so tired by that point. You know, we're just like done. So I think that's the hardest part about working in film, like the really, really long hours. So I'm grateful that it's not like all the time. It's just for like a month or two, and then you're mm-hmm. you're done with that project. So I still definitely enjoy the process, because every film is something new, so it's mm-hmm. a different way to challenge myself and create new effects. Mm-hmm. But I do notice that people really love like slit throats and like a squib, like a gunshot wound going off. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones I do very, very often.
Is that what you do the most, would you say?
A lot of slit throats and blood spraying out.
what is your favorite thing to do?
My favorite thing? I guess making creatures, or like seeing your work on the screen after, is really exciting. You're like, wow, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
That's my favorite part of stuff coming out finally.
Yeah,
I think.
Seeing it all together.
Yeah. Seeing it all come together.
Yeah, because I think when you're putting it together, you're in the moment, you're like, oh, I don't know if this is gonna work, I don't know if this is gonna look good, but when you see it all done, you're like, wow, I did that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting.
What was something that you're the most proud of seeing come out on the screens?
Well, there was a scene I did in the film Kill Her, which came out in 2022. And at the very end of the film, one of the characters basically gets her head crushed by a car. And we see the aftermath, which we basically that day, we I think we had 54 setups, which was a lot. And we had like no time for anything. So basically I made a mask instead of a prosthetic. So I just like threw it on the actor and like dressed her with blood and like bits of brain and bone. And then 5 minutes to dress her. And then we had to shoot it before the sun went down because we'd be like aware of the light. And then it did come out good. So it was really cool being at the premiere at Scream Fest, which is a horror film festival. And people were like, oh, when they saw the scene, I was like, yes, okay, that looked good.
You did your job.
Yeah. So that's very rewarding to get like audience reactions to stuff.
So when people cringe, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's how you know you
nailed it. So everyone's like, why would you do that stuff? But I'm like, if it grossed you out, I did my job. If you look at it and you laugh, then I'm like, okay, that's not, it didn't sell the effect.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
How would you explain to somebody who's like, ew or gross, that like how beautiful like the horror aspect in the horror industry can be as far as art goes?
I mean, I feel like that's a battle I've been fighting forever with my parents because my mom doesn't get it. She's like, why can't you make things pretty? I'm like, but it is pretty. It's just, you know, a different kind of pretty. You know,
right.
There's different kinds of work and artistry that goes into it. Like, I guess the easiest way I could say to put it would be like, if you look at like real corpses from like forensic photos, because when we, as special effects artists, when we have to do research, we do have to look at real photos. So it gets a little gnarly sometimes, but there's a certain artistry that you have to bring to, like, for example, a corpse makeup. So that on screen it looks good, because when you look at a real forensic photo, it almost doesn't look real because you're so used to seeing film versions in the media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been like done up a little more presentable for the screen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how I would say that. Yeah.
Does it get rough after a while?
It does. So I do have to like take a step back sometimes and be like, okay. I mean, I think I've mellowed as I gotten older. When I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. But I guess it was like my edgelord days. now I have a little bit more, I would say I've developed a little bit more empathy. Like I can't like look at a lot of these for too long. But yeah, if I look at the reference photos only if I have to for a specific job.
Gotcha. Yeah. What in the makeup and FX industry, the different genres, how does that, how does like your kit differentiate, or like what would you say is the biggest difference between working in the different genres of like horror and things like that?
So the thing about being a makeup artist, especially in LA, is that you kind of have to do everything. Mm-hmm. Like some people only do one thing, like just beauty, or they just do effects. But I think because of the range of work you need to do, a lot of the times, especially on indie productions, I do a lot of indie stuff. You have to do everything. So you have to do beauty like for the regular characters as well as the effects. And so we have to have two kits. I basically have an effects kit and I have a beauty kit. So I usually bring both on the days that I need to do both. And it's a lot to carry around with you, and it's very expensive to like build up your kit. But I think once you get to a certain point, like once you've established your kit, you just like add little things to it. So it's not terrible, but just getting started, I think, is the hardest part.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know that you have to supply all that stuff yourself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So you charge like a kit fee and it covers like small amounts of your stuff. But like, for example, I wouldn't want to like leave my kit out because that's like $3,000-$4,000 worth of supplies in my kit. You know, it's just so much.
Right. Yeah. It's can be stressful, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you have like a crazy story of doing someone's makeup and like having to cover something in the chair? This was a question that my roommate Amanda wanted to know.
Oh, I mean, I guess I've had models really like high, like on coke or something, and they can't like sit still, or they're like on their phone. And I'm like, hey, would you mind like looking up? And just trying to get their makeup done is really hard. So it's nice when you have a model that understands that you're just there to do your job and you can get them out of the chair as soon as possible. But I guess one of the craziest stories I have is I was working on this music video for this artist. Me and my friend, we did this beautiful like vine flower covered makeup for her, like full body makeup. So she had like a floral lingerie set on, and then we glued on these vines that I sculpted, as well as like these roses. She had a beautiful like $10,000 wig that was like Rapunzel, like all the way down to the ground. And then when we got to set, the director and all his crew hadn't done what she had requested for. Like, they hadn't like blacked out the house, so all the natural light was coming. It was supposed to be a dark scene. She asked for like a big library, and it wasn't the right one. And then so they basically messed up the entire shoot, and they ended up having to scrap that whole video. And it was like so much money wasted, and I felt horrible. And she was so apologetic, you know, because she knew like it wasn't something that we did. Mm-hmm. You know, we did our work and we showed up, and it was just very sad to see all that time and effort just wasted because the rest of the crew weren't pulling their weight.
Damn. Yeah. That sucks.
They were very young, so I think they were kind of just like not taking the job seriously, which is unfortunate because it's someone else's time and money, you know, and you're hired to do a job. So it's like, wouldn't you want to like do your best?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that is.
Some of the stuff you see in the industry is pretty insane.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a ton of stories of like all of that, like crazy stuff, disasters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know just from cosplaying, like anything could go wrong at any moment. There's so many times where I have my whole cosplay on, my wig on, my makeup on, and I'll be walking out of the door and something will just pop off.
Oh no.
And I have to like run inside and
stuff. So you always need a handler to like put stuff back up.
Totally. Even I feel like I've been cosplaying for over 10 years now, and I still think I can do everything myself for some reason. Mm-hmm. So I'll go and then I'll have to wrangle somebody last minute or something. Just
gotta not be afraid to ask for help. Mm-hmm. I think I learned.
Totally.
Especially if you're in a crazy outfit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of why I took a step back from cosplay. I think my last big costume was the Symmetra one we talked about. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I realized that I like getting people into costumes and making sure they look perfect rather than having to worry about myself being in a costume.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a ton of work.
Yeah.
The Symmetra costume, what was the hardest part about doing something so huge, putting together something so huge?
I think just making sure everything like worked, because there's a lot of moving parts. I had like moving flowers on my shoulder, that moving wheel on my back. Mm-hmm. I had the gun that moved, so it was a lot of pieces. And I think the fiberglass backpack that I had for the wheel, I think it was about 25 pounds, even though most of it was foam. It was just a lot of weight that I was carrying around all day. So by the end, I was just like dying.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Cosplay is crazy.
Yeah.
It's so much work in general.
Yeah. But I mean, that was also BlizzCon. And BlizzCon, you know, was very much like go hard or go home.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that costume burned you out a little bit and you're getting the bug back a little bit more? Here and there? Or are you kind of like, I want to put other people in cosplays for a while?
I think I do get the itch to make costumes again, but I think lately I've been channeling a lot of my work into other art, because now I started making dolls. So I think I spend a lot more of my time and my money into that rather than on costumes, which I know I'm going to wear once and never wear again.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, whereas like this, it's like, it's a business that I can, you know, continue to work on and develop. Yeah.
And you brought some of them.
Yeah, I brought a few of them. Yeah.
Tell me about the doll
making
process.
Would you like to hold one?
Yeah.
Let you hold this one.
What's her name?
This girl's name is Sue.
Sue.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so cute.
They're fully posable. I sculpt and I cast everything myself, and they have elastic joints. So her joints like click into place.
Wow.
Yeah. You can change their eyes and their hair and their outfits.
I love their makeup too.
Thank you. Yeah, I designed them. I engineered all that. So they're ball joint dolls. They're based on like Japanese ball joint dolls. So
wow.
Yeah.
Look at her.
She's got her cute lingerie on.
Yes.
She's serving a little bit.
She is serving. she's serving.
Like, oh, I'm cute.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
What made you want to do the dolls, and what's the process like?
So I think it's very similar to prop making. You know, you sculpt the piece in a clay first, and then you make silicone molds. Her knees
just scared. I don't want to break it.
She won't break. She's sturdy. Her knees just like pop in. They have like locking joints.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah, and you can make her sit. Like that. But yeah, it's cute. You sculpt her in an air dry clay, and then I cast her in a mold her in silicone, and then they're cast in a resin. Oops. Yeah. Oh,
I love her.
Yeah. And so like, I don't make the clothes just yet, just because there's so much other stuff to do. But a lot of it is my focus is like mainly the head sculpts and like the making sure the joints work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's it's super, super cool.
Thank you.
And then this lady over here.
Yeah, she's inspired by Junji Ito's Tomie. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with Junji Ito. He's a horror manga artist. Mm-hmm. Did like Uzumaki and stuff. So he has a character called Tomie, and that's kind of my sculpt that's based on her. Yeah, she's like this tumorous growth of herself that's kind of coming out of her face.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it in a ton of like art, and I've seen it online a lot.
Yeah,
but
it's a new venture for me, but I'm very excited to see where it goes. I'm doing a lot more doll conventions now.
Mm-hmm.
So I do vend at horror conventions as well, like Midsummer Scream, a Monsterpalooza. So I sell like my paintings, my sculptures. I make scented candles. I do makeup demos. So like this is a piece from a makeup demo that I did over here with my little lady's head.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm doing a lot more doll conventions, which are more doll-centric because it's such a specific niche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that they don't really sell to general audiences because these are basically like art pieces.
Mm-hmm. Do people collect them like art pieces?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a very niche hobby, and I think that people either really love the dolls or they're just like, you know, casual. They just want to dress their dolls up and play with them. Whereas some people take it seriously. They want to like paint them themselves or customize them and create their own characters.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
I love learning more about like the industry as a whole, you know, because it's something I don't know a ton about.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. So you bring them and do you sell them online as well?
I'm still working on it because I think they're very much in prototype phase, but I am taking a few to an upcoming convention called Resin Rose in Portland, Oregon in August. Mm-hmm. And there I'll be selling a few handmade pieces that I've done. But eventually at some point I want to let a factory take care of that so I don't have to do my own casting because it's a lot of work and it's like all the sanding. It's too much in my hands.
It's crazy that you do all that yourself.
Yeah, it's a lot. Some days I'm like, why did I choose this? But then when it's done, you're like, oh, okay, never mind. I take that back.
But it's going to be awesome when you get somebody to wholesale that for you, you know?
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
What's the process of that like?
For finding a factory? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So I basically went around like, asking, like I recently went to New York Doll Convention.
Mm-hmm.
That was earlier in March this year. And so I met a bunch of East Coast doll makers. And so I kind of talked to them about what they do because I'm pretty new. I think I only started making these dolls like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to them about which factories they like to use. And so I talked to a couple factories and got some quotes for how much they would charge like per doll. And so you have to kind of weigh that with how much you're going to charge to sell your doll. And a lot of the times, for example, like these are probably for a base doll without costumes, you're looking at like $500-$600.
Mm-hmm.
And with a full set, you're looking at maybe like $800 to $1,000. So it really depends on how much the doll artist decides to sell them for, because these are handmade pieces. They're not like a Barbie where it's like mass produced by a company.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you really, a lot of the times you really don't make that much on top of what the factory is charging.
Yeah, I feel like that's low compared to what I expected they would sell for.
Yeah,
because they're so
it's so competitive now because a lot of companies coming out of China, they have the factories there, so they can charge really low prices for something. So you're competing with that, and you have to kind of weigh, are people going to pay this for your work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When they can get something cheap, much cheaper. So that's the difficult part.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. I imagined like juggling both things, but you sculpting them and sanding them and doing the makeup and everything, it's so much work, but they're definitely worth that, if not more, I would say.
Yeah, well, that's very sweet. Thank you.
You're welcome. How would you say, as far as your cosplays go, or your original creations, because you do these beautiful original characters that are inspired by like all of like your history and everywhere that you've traveled to, how do you balance the creative freedom versus the character accuracy for some of the cosplays that you do?
I would say when I was younger, I was more of like it has to be 100% accurate mm-hmm. or I'm not happy with it.
Yeah,
but
too.
As I've gotten older, I've realized that I liked doing my own takes on characters. So I think mm-hmm. when I was still cosplaying, I would do a lot of like male versions of female characters I liked. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a bit of creative freedom to kind of change them to make it more like a masculine outfit. And so now I realize that I like creating my own characters because then no one's gonna, you know, cosplay can be tough because if everyone is doing the same character, people are gonna be like, oh, the good one. Oh, mm-hmm. the ugly one, you know? And that's mm-hmm. not a nice feeling because right. people should be able to enjoy cosplay however they want.
Right.
And I learned that if I'm going to make a costume, I want to just like be my own thing so people don't have to compare me to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I just want to make my own characters. And so that's mm-hmm. kind of what I do with these makeup demos. It's kind of like a way to show off these characters I create as well as my skill as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is an example
yeah.
of one that you worked on, right?
So this is a piece that was from a makeup I did in 2023. She's the character was a Chinese fox spirit, nine-tailed fox. So her head. So she's basically like ripping off her skin and her human head was like coming off and the fox was like coming out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we have photos we're going to put on yeah. the screen. Brian, you're going to put photos on the screen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I made a silicone cast of my model's head and she had to like wear it on her shoulder all day. So that was fun.
It's crazy. So when you do a silicone cast, because you casted your own face for the Symmetra stuff, right?
Yes, but I did have a friend help me because gotcha. That stuff is pretty dangerous. So you don't really want to do it yourself.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's tutorials online that show how to do it with plaster, but you know, that stuff is dangerous. So whenever you do a life cast, you need someone else to help you with it because the worst thing is you could either get the silicone blocking your airways or you could like lock yourself into plaster. So it's very imperative that you learn how to do it properly or go to a school or take a course or have a friend who knows how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you cast your own face or you're casting somebody's face, like how do you go about doing that?
So the process is if, for example, we're doing like a bust up to the shoulder, we cover their face in a silicone, like a two-part silicone. Usually mm-hmm. I like to use a body double silk by Smooth On because mm-hmm. it releases from the hair really nice. So if you like peach fuzz, it's not going to rip it out. But you cover it in silicone, then you have to make a two-part plaster shell, which helps keep the form of the silicone because mm-hmm. silicone by itself is very like flimsy.
Mm-hmm.
But so you have to create that shell so it holds its shape. And then once it's done, you cut the back up and you take off the piece. And then you can either cast the life cast in stone or you can run it in silicone. Like for mine, I think I just ran the piece straight out of the mold with silicone and then I filled it with expanding foam.
Mm.
Yeah.
So and it's difficult to do makeup on
yes.
silicone.
Right? She has some makeup on her. Like I used some shimmer powders for like the highlights and stuff, but for the actual makeup itself, it's a silicone paint. So you have to mix the pigment with, because nothing sticks to silicone except silicone.
Right.
So you basically have to paint it with silicone with pigment in it.
Mm.
Yeah. So that is tough.
Right.
Yeah.
It's stuff that nobody would realize unless they were part of it. And I only know that because I saw Stella make a mold of her own head
yeah.
and then go through, because we work in the same workshop next to each other, the whole process of nothing is sticking to this. The airbrush isn't sticking.
Yeah.
The makeup's not sticking.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have known that otherwise.
Yeah. So when you're working with silicone, it's tricky because you have to thin it down with I use Novox from Smooth On, which is basically like a naphtha.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a lighter fluid. So you basically have to thin that down and then mix the pigment into it and then bond it to the silicone. But you also have a strict working time because once it's past like a 72-hour window, the silicone won't stick to itself. So everything will start peeling. So it's a lot of variables that can go wrong.
Oh my god.
Silicone is tough.
The learning curve sounds crazy.
Yeah, it's tough. But once you kind of learn it, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of things you can do. And these pieces last forever because they're silicone. Like latex breaks down over time, but silicone has a much longer shelf life.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And can you do prosthetics out of silicone and latex?
Yeah. I personally don't do a lot of foam latex because you need a whole foam oven for that. And you can't use your regular foam oven because when it bakes, ammonia comes out. So your whole oven is toxic. And basically, you don't want to be cooking food in that. So for me personally, I don't have a studio space at the moment. So I work out of my kitchen. And so a lot of my prosthetics are silicone just because it's like a two-part and it cures on its own. It doesn't need anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of the prosthetics I personally like to do are two-part silicone. But if I have to do foam, I would usually have a friend run the pieces for me, or I use their oven to run pieces.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What is your favorite and least favorite type of look to create, would you say?
Well, my favorite type of look would be like a horror fantasy type creature. And I guess my least favorite would be... I don't know if I have a least favorite, but I, because it all just comes with the job, you know. I love like a clean beauty makeup as well, you know. Mm-hmm. It's also learning how to control how heavy your application is. So I think that takes a lot of skill as well. Mm-hmm. To do like a clean beauty makeup. I don't know if I mean, the only thing I can think of is like when something is too trendy, like when everyone started doing the. Was it I can't remember the artist who did the shiny face makeup that all the runways were doing, you know, everyone was trying to emulate that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think Pat McGrath, yeah, the Pat McGrath like porcelain doll look, when everyone starts jumping on the same trend and doing the same thing, I'm like, can mm-hmm. you guys like do something else? That's I guess what I would say.
I was gonna ask if you had any makeup trends that you love and that you hate. Would that be your least favorite makeup trend, would you say?
I mean, when you say that, the first thing that comes to mind is like the 2016 zipper face. The
what
zipper, it's like a Halloween makeup where they glue a zipper down their face.
I do know exactly what you're talking about, actually.
I hated that makeup, but that was really bad. Oh, and I hate sometimes when you get Halloween gigs and they're like, can I have like a soda can, like, in my head? And for me, it irritates me because I try and think of it from a point of like, how would that happen? Because for the can to penetrate your skull, it would have to shoot at a really high velocity to penetrate through the skull and have weight to it, because an empty can would not go through your head like that. So mm-hmm. things like that, which affect the believability of a makeup, I think irritate mm-hmm. me sometimes. Yeah.
It's funny because I've watched movies and stuff, like you said earlier, with people who do lighting and do photography and videography, and they'll constantly be like, the light is over there and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's blue and it's the sun. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So it's funny to hear you say that, because I never considered stuff like that with makeup before.
Yeah. Because I think too, with makeup, especially when you're a film makeup artist, a lot of times you think like, how did this happen? Why does this person have their hair up? You know, like mm-hmm. maybe they were going to do some housework and so they put their hair up. But so there's a lot of things you think about for a mm-hmm. character. And I think that's what irritates me sometimes, is when things don't make sense and you're like, uh-huh. why?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I recently started doing voice acting.
Oh,
and
cool.
And hearing you say that is very, very similar to all of the classes that I have been taking, where they're like, but why are you saying that? Because
yeah.
you'll get lines and you won't have any information about the character or
yeah.
where you are. And that's kind of what I'm in the middle of learning right now, is practicing figuring out where you are in the scene mm-hmm. and who you're talking to, because it changes the little inflections in your voice
yeah.
to make it believable.
Yeah.
And people don't even think about that. I never thought about that. And
yeah.
it's really interesting to character develop, like, what's happening.
Mm. But even when it's a little note, it changes a lot of the performance, mm-hmm. which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think, like, it helps give yourself more of a world to live in when mm-hmm. you're that character.
And it spans industries, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about. I have so many makeup questions. I'm so excited we're on the makeup part.
Yay. Your favorite.
Yeah. What would you say is some of your biggest accomplishments as far as makeup goes? Or some of the most exciting milestones, would you say? I'm sure, like, working on something like with Megan Thee Stallion and these big movies.
I think the fact that I'm even living in LA working in this industry is a huge accomplishment for me, because mm-hmm. I remember being in Singapore, which is like a tiny little dot on the map. You're just like, oh, I'm watching all this stuff on TV. It seems so far away. And mm-hmm. now I'm like here getting contacted by big companies like Larian or Blizzard to make stuff for them.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very surreal to me every time I get an opportunity like that. So I'm very grateful. I don't know if I would say I have a biggest milestone, because it feels like I'm not aiming to climb a mountain. It just mm-hmm. feels like any new opportunity that comes, I'm like, oh, I'm grateful that I have this. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, thank you, universe.
Totally.
You
know? Yeah. And that's such an important perspective to have as a creator, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's really easy to constantly look forward and then you don't get to appreciate where you've come and all the things that you do.
Yeah. You don't like look back and see how far you've grown or come as an artist. And I think it's important to not look at the numbers, but just be like, take each project as it comes and, you know, just do your best.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's something that I definitely have to do more of, because I will not pay attention to all of these accomplishments because I'm moving so fast, doing so many things, and it's like the next thing. And then I'm like, if I have a month or so where I don't have as many cons or as many like business opportunities, I'm like, oh no, what am I doing? So I must be doing something wrong. And somebody will be like, but you just did like five things.
Yeah.
I have to remember, you know?
I think that's very much like a creative, like something as a creative you experience, because you feel like if you're not being productive, you're not actively making stuff, then you get a bit of the imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us felt that during COVID. When all the cons shut down, we weren't working, you know, we're stuck at home. I definitely felt that. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? Like, what if I can't like do makeup anymore? You know?
Yeah.
So, I think it's, but then it's a good time to like slow down and reflect and look back at all your old work and be like, look, I actually did all this, you know, and this is like how far I've grown as a person, as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's so important and easy to forget. So it's really, it's very healthy of you to have that mentality. Okay, I have some fact or caps for you regarding makeup. I'm going to read you a makeup hot take, if you will, and then you tell me if it's fact or cap and why. Starting with, skincare is the most important step of the makeup routine.
Yes, definitely. Yes? I would say think of your skin as like a canvas. Mm-hmm. So if you're not going to prime it, then your paint is not going to sit on a good surface. So I would say definitely like keeping your skin hydrated, making sure you're, you know, doing your skin prep before you go to sleep. Or even for prosthetics, if you're drinking a ton of alcohol the night before, no adhesive is going to stick to your skin the next day, because when you sweat, it comes out through your pores and that will cause the adhesive. Yeah. So alcohol will leach out through your skin and then mess with the adhesive and things won't stick.
That's so crazy to know.
Yeah. So I always have to tell my actors like, hey, if you're getting prosthetics on tomorrow, you can't be drinking the night before. Like, you can drink in the makeup or like after, but if you're shooting for a few days in prosthetics, I'm sorry, you can't drink.
That's crazy. Yeah. I had no idea. So when you say skin prep, what would you say, like, for an everyday cosplayer, and they're putting their makeup on, what should they do for skin prep, would you say?
I say definitely moisturize, hydrate. I mean, it depends on the kind of costume that you're doing. If you don't want to be bloated the next day, obviously don't consume a ton of sodium, you know, so that way, you know, your body doesn't retain all that water.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you hydrate, make sure you exfoliate your lips, things like that. Lip balm is very healthy. I personally have very dry lips all the time, so I always need to have lip balm on me.
I feel like I apply lip gloss like every 10 minutes, especially when I'm streaming and I'm talking.
Yeah.
It just disappears.
I think the weather too is a huge factor. Like, you know, we have a lot of cons here in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're doing a shoot at an outdoor event where the elements are not in your control as much, I definitely having like an alcohol setting spray is really good, like on top of your regular beauty setting spray, because that will help like lock everything in. So I like to mix the both of them.
Wow, I'm learning. I'm so excited. That was one of them too. Is alcohol setting spray better than regular setting spray?
I won't say it's better. I would say they have different uses.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, I know a lot of people love like the Urban Decay setting spray, which is basically Scandinavia. It's just in different packaging. So, but that's the bridal setting spray is really good for beauty.
Mm-hmm.
I would say an alcohol setting spray can be drying, but it's good for like really locking stuff in for a full day if you know you're going to be shooting. The thing that it does though is it does leave a bit of a sheen. So if you're oily, you might want to bring extra powder, just powder.
Yeah. What if you have dry skin? Asking for me.
then I would say make sure you hydrate for sure. And also the products that you have, you want to look for stuff that's more on like the dewy side. Mm-hmm. You don't want to look for a very mattifying foundation, for example, because mm-hmm. then that will accentuate, you know, the dryness of the skin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the day, I feel like before I took all of that seriously and did a lot of skincare or anything, I would cake on matte, and especially when Matt was in. Yeah. Remember when Matt was in?
Yeah.
The Kylie Jenner matte nails. The
2016 makeup. Mm-hmm. We're all victims of that.
Yes.
I know when I was a kid, before I learned anything about makeup, I was literally like rubbing like full coverage foundation on and then going over the top with a pressed powder that had pigment in it. So it's just like so much makeup.
Same.
And I look back, I'm like, my face was orange.
Yeah, and it was cakey. Yeah, it looked like a lizard. Yeah. Okay, blending foundation with your fingers is better because of the body heat. Fact or cap?
I mean, personally, if I'm doing my own makeup, I'm fine using fingers. But if I'm doing a client's makeup, I don't like to use my hands. I know some makeup artists do and they like to mix on their hands. But for hygiene reasons and just for like you don't want to cross-contaminate or transfer, I like to do it all on the palette and apply with a brush mm-hmm. or a sponge. But that's me personally. I would say fingers are fine. I mean, sponges depend on how you use them. Like sometimes sponges soak up too much product depending on the sponge that you have. Mm. So you end up wasting a lot of the product because you get stuck in the sponge. So I like to use mm-hmm. brushes a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But fingers are fine if it's your own makeup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Powder will make your foundation cakey.
I don't agree with that. I think that powder sets everything, like locks it in place, especially because if you don't, for example, if I'm applying like a liquid to eyeshadow pigment and I don't lock it in with a powder, it can tend to like run or like crease, especially in the eyelid. So I think that as long as you set your makeup after with like a setting spray, because it kind of like melts everything together, then that takes down that powdery look. And I think too, it helps to, for example, if I'm doing like skin, I like to use a medium coverage foundation instead of a full coverage because then it's buildable. Mm. You don't have to worry about it getting too heavy too fast. And that mm-hmm. tends to happen a lot of like MAC foundations or like NARS where it's like really heavy. So if I like to use Makeup Forever or like the Laura Mercier. Mm-hmm. So that way I can build it up to as much as I need. Because sometimes if you have great skin, you don't really need that much foundation. You mm-hmm. just need to like cover some of your blemishes and even out that skin tone.
Mm-hmm.
So BB creams can be good for that too as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I personally hate the clean girl whole movement that has been going on. Because I've always been a full coverage eyelashes.
Fun colors.
Yeah, kind of person. And I tried to do the like more clean girl BB cream stuff. And mm-hmm. I kept looking at myself in the mirror, like wanting more. So then I decided it's just not for me and I'm going to do it anyway.
And that's fine because I feel like makeup on your person is such a personal thing. Like you shouldn't mm-hmm. have to follow a trend or, I mean, for me as a makeup artist, when I'm working in the industry, I have to keep up with trends just mm-hmm. because I have to be in the know. But at the end of the day, when you're doing your own makeup, it can be whatever you want. Like mm-hmm. you don't have to do what everyone else is doing with a clean girl look. Mm-hmm. I like a good clean makeup, but I agree, like it's gotten kind of boring. Like the palettes that they're putting out, everything's just nudes now. I'm like, mm-hmm. where's the color? Like I think 2016 makeup is making a little bit of a resurgence still, so that's fun.
I see it.
Yeah.
It's coming.
I mean, the 2000s are in right now. Everyone's bringing back, like, not my favorite, but they're bringing back, like, the frosted lips.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, on the fence with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the heavier, like, cut crease and like crazy shadows. Yeah,
me too.
Glitter.
I'm excited.
Yeah,
I see it on the horizon.
Yeah,
it's coming. Using Sharpies as eyeliner is safe.
No. The only people that I've seen do that is like, you know, you're familiar with like ganguro or like gyaru.
Uh-uh.
So it's a Japanese subculture where they wear the really tan makeup because they want to look like California girls and they have like the white makeup.
Mm.
So like, because a lot of them, well, back in the day, I was kind of into that subculture for a little bit. Well, they didn't have money, so they would go to the stores and use like Sharpie for their eyeliner. And I'm like, looking back, I'm like, I'm glad I didn't do that because that would have been so bad for your skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially around your eyes.
Yeah.
Never mix silicone-based products with water-based products.
Yeah, I think you don't want to mix this. They would sit weird, and sometimes they separate. So that's mm-hmm. something you have to keep in mind. I think especially when you there's like a method to do it. So for example, if you're using a silicone-based primer and you go on top with that, you want to make sure that your products are compatible, or they can like cause weird issues with texture on the skin and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been a victim to that as well, especially with dry skin.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes texture very visible, and that's always like a nightmare to deal mm-hmm. with, because you can't cover texture, but you can cover color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you use Vaseline as a primer? That's another one from Witchy Brew, my roommate.
Oh, really? I've personally never done that. I've used Vaseline as lip balm. Mm. But with primer, sometimes if I'm on a shoot and I don't use a primer, I would just moisturize first and then just go in with the product. Because you don't mm-hmm. always need a primer. I would say you can use, like, you know, there's a difference with face primer and the eye primer. Mm-hmm. But I personally like to do a little bit of face primer. I like the Smashbox 24 Photo Studio Primer. That's my, like, one of my go-tos, because I like the sheer stuff, so that way there's no pigment underneath when you put more pigment on top of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. Using a white base will make your foundation show up better.
I've seen that trend.
I know.
I don't know if I like it. It's because I guess too, when you're doing makeup for a studio in front of studio lights, it's very different from when you're doing film. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people that, like, the kind of makeup that I do, it's more for like 4D, like 4K cameras. Like, you're mm-hmm. going to see it up close. So when you do the white base underneath and you put your regular foundation over, it's going to look very crazy under 4K like camera and lighting. Mm-hmm. In the studio lighting, it's fine because the lighting kind of washes everything out. It's almost like stage.
Mm-hmm,
so mm-hmm. I don't really agree with the white base, but I can see why some people do it. Yeah.
Okay, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
Well, that is the last question that I have for you for YouTube. So we're gonna segue into Patreon. But
cool.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for answering.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. I'm glad that we got to hang out,
yes.
at least in some capacity, and talk about video games,
yes.
and makeup. Where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me on Instagram and YouTube. I don't really update my YouTube that much, so I'll say Instagram. Kelton FX, that's KeltonFX. And my doll count is Cheng Dolls, which is CHENGDOLLS, Cheng Dolls. And you can see more of my ball joint dolls that I make.
Yeah. Any upcoming projects that you have that you are excited about?
I'm still waiting on this unreleased horror, like 80s horror slasher I worked on, which has really cool effects in it. So I hope it comes out soon, hoping in November, but we'll see. And then I just finished a pretty cool project that I can't talk about just yet, but you'll find out maybe in like July.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm excited. So two undisclosed, very exciting things on the horizon.
Yeah.
Update us when they come out. So
I will. I'll be on my Instagram.
Yeah. So we can plug them. So do you have any makeup industry hot takes that you are willing to share with us?
Hot takes.